Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hey, what's up? My name is Nolan. I am from Past Gas by Donut Media, the world's number one automotive history show. This week, we're talking about the most famous race in Australia, the Bathurst 1000, the 1,000-kilometer race at the Mount Panorama Circuit. If you know anything about Australian motorsport, even how little, doesn't matter if you know nothing about this race, you probably know about Bathurst. This is the most iconic track down under. It spawned tons of rivalries from Ford versus GM, Peter Brock versus everybody. Everybody versus Nissan, like the list goes on, and we're going to talk about it all. We're going to talk about the origins of the race, the origins of the track itself. A mayor did some fun corruption and had the track built using Great Depression money. It's crazy. Anyway, check it out. That's Past Gas by Donut Media. Anywhere you get your podcasts, follow the show today. Past Gas. Hey guys, welcome to the Past Gas Podcast. If you like Past Gas, please help us grow by giving us a good rating and a nice review on the podcast platform of your choice. It'll really help us out, and I really appreciate that. So thank you. All right, now for the show. When we left off last week, AMC had just won their first Trans Am Championship. The year was 1971. It was a tumultuous time in America. The unrest of the 60s was still fresh in the minds of many Americans, as more of their fellow countrymen were in the streets protesting the ongoing Vietnam War. Inflation was rising rapidly as the economy was on the brink of another recession.
I am today ordering a freeze on all prices and wages throughout the United States for a period of 90 days.
Things weren't looking good, especially for the American Motors Corporation. Their bid to triumph over the Big Three in Trans Am was successful, but the victory was hollow as their competitors had pulled out of the sport entirely.
The next two races are also won with a Donoghue Penske Javelin team.
But how did an American car company's untimely demise lead to the assassination of a French automotive executive? Well, we're going to find out. This is Past Gas. Welcome back to Past Gas, everyone. I'm your host, Nolan Sykes, joined as always by my other hosts, James Pumphrey.
Hi.
And Joe Weber.
What's up, Past Gas Nation?
Last week, we were talking about the Javelin and...
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love the Javelin. I think it's...
Me too.
It's just so cool.
I think
cool.
It's such a weird car. Like, the design is just a little off. I think maybe because they're not around anymore, so none of the design cues have been carried on, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the
proportions
still,
are actually a little bit off.
Which right.
Are,
yeah, like...
It's kind of like a weird... Cool
they look
thing.
Like Dexter's Laboratory cars. Yeah. Like they look like the parents' cars from Dexter's
That's
Laboratory.
That's pretty funny. That's an astute
There are actually a bunch of Javelins on Craigslist that I was looking at mm-hmm. for a while. I would never actually go through with it, but I think they're pretty cool.
I would eventually like, maybe not a Javelin, but definitely
I would love to own an AMC, like a Hudson or a Rambler or a Nash at some point.
Is the Eagle the like wagon that's super high up?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, like a four-wheel drive wagon.
Oh, yeah. So cool.
Okay. Today, we're talking about the assassination of George Bess and how AMC might have been inadvertently responsible for his death. Shall we get into it?
Yeah.
Frenchman Jean-Marc Rouillon decided he wanted to get involved. Jean.
That one's... Okay, right, that
is
one's,
that one on, that one's on
I'll
me?
Give that one to Joe.
Okay, yeah, I'll start over. Jean-Marc... Frenchman Jean-Marc Rouillon decided he wanted to involve himself in some Spanish politics with the goal of bringing down Spain's fascist Franco government. Back in 1936, a vicious civil war had broken out in the country. Fighting was done between the Republicans, the ruling party made up of urban workers, farmers, and the educated middle class, versus nationalist rebels, a coalition of military leaders, landowners, business owners, and the church. By mid-year, the nationalists captured nearly half of the country, as well as Spanish territories like the Canary Islands and Spanish Morocco. In the months that followed, Spain was ravaged with atrocities committed by both sides, as both Republicans and nationalists looked beyond their borders for help. Around 40,000 foreigners came to the Republicans' aid, while nationalist leader General Francisco Franco asked fascist Italy and Nazi Germany for assistance, which they happily provided. After 2 years of brutal combat, the nationalists captured the capital of Madrid as most of the Republican forces were disbanded. After the war, Franco was given absolute power. He was not burdened with the obligation to consult his cabinet before making any legislation. Franco's government was extremely authoritarian in nature. A cult of personality was built around Franco, and espoused that he had been sent by God to save Spain. People were encouraged to report any co-workers suspected of any, quote, leftist activities. Franco made any non-government union illegal, which took away any organizing power in the private sector. Franco ignored Spain's diverse heritage and instead heavily promoted, quote, traditional Spanish activities like bullfighting and flamenco dancing. Franco's government censored the media, making criticism illegal as late as 1970. I think you guys are probably getting the picture here.
Yeah, it's just like right now.
Franco was a bad guy, and Francoist Spain doesn't sound like a good place to be. And that's where Frenchman...
kind of like right now.
And that's where Frenchman Jean-Marc Rouillon comes into play. The Frenchman was based in the town of Toulouse, about a two-hour drive from the border with Spain. In the time since the Spanish Civil War, exiled Republican fighters had crossed the border into southern France, and they hadn't forgotten anything that Franco had put them through. The mood in the region was still very counter-revolutionary, even 30 years after Franco took power. Jean-Marc fashioned himself as a freedom fighter and was inspired to start his own counter-revolutionary group when he heard that Spanish police had assassinated one Salvador Puig Antic, a member of the anti-Franco Iberian Liberation Movement. Jean-Marc was radicalized by this killing, and he was not the only one.
Jean-Marc and the other revolutionaries formed Groupes des Actions Révolutionnaires Internationales, or GARI, and began carrying out operations in Spain and southern France by robbing banks in Brussels, Paris, and Toulouse. GARI was able to fund their insurgent acts. They machine-gunned the Spanish Prime Minister's car, sabotaged railways, burned buses, and bombed buildings. 11 firefighters were seriously injured when GARI placed a bomb on the roof of a Spanish school. Then, when two of its members were arrested during a routine traffic stop, GARI was dismantled in 1979. But because they were arrested in France and not Spain, Jean and the other GARI were not charged with terrorism in that country, and they were released. Jean-Marc Rouillon took some time off from robbing and bombing and decided to regroup.
So yeah, I don't know if any clarification needs to be made there.
This seems like a movie.
Clarify away.
Have they not made a movie about this?
Not yet, Joe.
Okay, first donut production, huh?
Yeah, this would definitely make a good movie for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah.
Clarify, Nolan. I could use a little clarification, even though I just read it.
So this group, Gary, in my research, it sounds like there were a lot of groups like Gary at this time. And they would like kind of pull, they would do those attacks, like the machine gunning of the car and the bombing and stuff like that. But it doesn't really seem like they're ever really successful at pulling off their goal. And mostly they just robbed a lot of banks. Because to them, that was also kind of an act of revolution, you know, because they were taking money from, you know, the financial institutions, and they kind of fashioned themselves as like Robin Hood in that way. But usually that money just went to financing their own acts anyway.
Dude, if they wanted to lead a revolution, why didn't they just drive across the country as fast as possible? That's how you really make a change.
Yeah, if you haven't listened to our Cannonball Run series, definitely check that out. I don't know what do you think Brock Yates would think of Gary?
I think he'd be like, y'all wasting your time. All you need to do is get a Ferrari and drive really fast across the country, and then everyone will listen up.
Yeah, if you think it, the fascist regime of Franco is pretty much the same as a 55-mile-per-hour speed limit.
Dude, I was thinking that. That's pretty much the exact same. Tony Angelo texted me after that the first Cannonball came out.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, dude, Brock Yates Jr. lives in my neighborhood. We get beers.
That's sick. Like,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I think maybe when we're allowed to go get beers with people again, we can go get beers with him.
Yeah, let's do that for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we go to Philly. We got to go to Philly, baby. If we want to go, if we want to get beers, we got to go to Philly, baby.
Donut does have like some good connection to Philly.
Dude, fucking love Philly. The homie Russo's fucking Philly.
Yeah. Russo.
Fucking Tony Angelo's from fucking Philly, baby.
Let's go get some Werder in Philly.
Yeah, let's go get some fucking Werder.
All right.
I hate the fucking Celtics or something. I hate the fucking Celtics or something. I hate the fucking Braves.
Anyway, AMC.
You're a Braves fan? You're a Braves fan? Fuck you.
Drink some water.
Drink some water and eat a fucking cheesesteak. I fucking hate the Phillies. I hate the Braves. And I hate the Bucks.
Why do you hate the Phillies?
No, I love the Phillies. What did I say? I'm just so fucking mad. Give me a glass of water.
Yeah, you need to calm down, man.
Here, I love Rocky.
Drink that.
I love
drink
Rocky. That. What are you talking about?
You guys made a statue for Rocky. Yeah, you made a statue for him for some reason. Anyway, AMC was struggling in the late 70s. An economic slump a few years earlier had kneecapped sales, and the company was struggling to recover. Their Gremlin and Pacer compact cars had been decent sellers, but the best was behind them by 1979. The only thing keeping AMC in the black was loans and Jeep. AMC had acquired Jeep back in 1970, buying the brand from the Kaiser Corporation, who had bought it from Willys Overland 7 years earlier.
Hey, wait, quick side note. I've been pronouncing Willys Jeep wrong this whole time. It's actually Willys Jeep.
Oh, thank you, Joe, the guy who knows
everyone
everything.
Everyone is pronouncing it wrong.
Willys. Yeah. All right, Willys Overland.
Oh, I think that we've been saying AMC wrong.
Yeah,
I think it's AMP.
How do you say
AMP? Okay,
that makes
yeah,
way
my
more
bad.
Sense. Yeah,
yeah, AMP. Okay. Under
I think
AMP.
The capitalization is what's confusing. It is all caps, but you don't say every letter.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So yeah, they bought it from Willys Overland 7 years earlier under AMP's ownership. Jeep innovated by introducing the first automatic all-wheel drive system in 1972. And they introduced the iconic CJ7 in 1976.
My dad had a CJ7, a white one.
That's sweet. Did he only have white cars?
He had a lot of them. He had a white Ranger. He had a white BMW. He had two white BMWs. White. Yeah, I think he liked white cars. I never thought about that. Maybe my dad was Pusha T.
I love Pusha T.
I love Pusha T because, like, all right, this guy, all he does is talk about, like, being, like, a legit drug dealer, right?
Yeah, cocaine cowboy,
like,
dude.
Yeah, so he's like the most drug dealer of all the rappers. But he was in clips. And so like he's been famous since he was 17 years old, probably 16 or 17, like involved in the music industry for, you know, almost as long as like Justin Timberlake.
Right.
So like Pusha T has just decided to do like drug dealer cosplay.
Yeah.
And like, that's his whole thing. Rick Ross is the same way. It's like, none of you guys sold drugs.
Yeah, speaking of Justin Timberlake, the first Clips song I ever, or the first instance of Clips I ever heard was in the Justin Timberlake song "Like I Love You," which has a verse by Pusha T on it, and it's actually pretty good. It's a great song.
Yeah, listen to that track.
Oh yeah,
that conversation came full circle real nicely. Back to the show.
Back to the show. Jeep produced a mail truck variant called the Dispatcher, a two-wheel drive CJ5 used by the United States Post Office. Thanks to the rising popularity of off-roading in the U.S., Jeep enjoyed great sales throughout the 70s. Essentially,
I thought you were going to say, thanks to the rising popularity of mail.
So essentially, Jeep was carrying AMC on its back. However, the profit margin for AMC was so low that the slightest hit to the economy would mean AMC was done for. And as luck would have it, that's exactly what happened.
Now, AMC had run up so much credit that no one would loan them any more money. So they started looking for a buyer. The company was too small for anyone in the U.S. looking to compete with the big three. But its small size did have an advantage. AMC was a perfect option for a large foreign automaker wanting to get in on the American market. And that's when French automaker Renault came into the picture. Meanwhile, back in France,
Jean-Marc Rouillon still had a passion for guerrilla warfare and a desire
to get... give up. It's hard to kick.
Yeah.
It's tough. I'm trying myself, man. I'm trying.
And he had a desire to get something done. So from the remnants of his dissolved Gary group, he formed a new one called Action Direct, or as we'll refer to them, Direct Action. Direct Action was a collaboration between former Gary members and another group called, how, I don't even know how to pronounce this. I'm going to do my best. Noyo Arm Pour Autonomie Populaire, or NAPAP for short.
My favorite NAPAP is the Calm app.
We're not sponsored by them.
We're not. We could be. Calm, hit us up. Info at donut.media.
Nap app.
You can hear Luke Perry say the Velveteen Rabbit.
Do they have Luke? I want to listen to Luke Wilson in the Velveteen Rabbit. Do they have that
Yeah,
option?
They got Luke Wilson reading Stuart Little.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a good day for Stuart. And, he was eating carrots, and then he went over and he wanted to see Mr. Badger. So he knocked on Mr. Badger's door. It was a cute little house. It's like a little animal house, you know, and like really, you know, reflected Mr. Badger's personality, which is a little grim and a little gruff. And then Mr. Badger came out, and even though he's like a little animal, he's got a front door. He's got decorations inside of his house, and he wears a little suit, like a little man suit. And like, they personify him. Like, he's very personified really well. Like, he's a grumpy. Badger's a grumpy animal, so he wears like the same kind of suit as like a grumpy, like kind of short, chubby guy with funny hair would wear, like in old England.
That was amazing.
It's really good, dude. That's so good.
It's great. It's called the Nap App. You get celebrities. We got celebrities, and they just read stories from our childhood.
That was incredible. Okay, so yeah, in 1979, Nap App restructured and vowed to carry out attacks in the name of anti-imperialism and, quote, proletarian defense. They wanted to fight for the little guy, but as this story progresses, I think their actions might have hurt more little guys than they helped. Direct Action carried out nearly 50 attacks. They attacked French government buildings, French army buildings, property management buildings, arms manufacturers, and carried out an attack
on the... Put a moratorium on rent now!
Now.
Okay. And carried out an attack on the employers' union headquarters, which was basically like there was labor unions, and then the employers' union was kind of like a cheeky name. This is where all the heads of industries would kind of hang out and try to figure out how to best
the little guy.
Basically, yeah. So if you made money exploiting the working class, or if direct action thought you did, you were a target.
We'll get back to more past gas, but right now, a word from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Meanwhile, back in America,
Renault had been looking for a way to get into the American market, but the logistics of bringing the company to U.S. soil was far too complicated. Plus, Renault didn't make a car that Americans would want to buy anyway. Renault made small cars for cramped cities, and while there are cramped cities all over this country, the thought of buying a small car to navigate them has never really been that popular for some reason.
I want to buy a Fiesta ST, baby.
I would love one of those. Are they affordable yet? We'll talk offline during the hobby conversation. Okay. Even though AMC sales were slumping hard, they at least had an idea of what kind of cars to build for Americans. So Renault jumped at the chance to buy a stake in the company. Renault bought $15 million in stock of AMC, which gave them 5% ownership. Far from the controlling stake. But Renault would lend AMC $135 million, which then turned into stock in the company, allowing Renault to eventually take control. The French firm sent two representatives over to the U.S. who were given board member positions and allowed Renault to observe how AMC did business. And what they found made these guys go, Sacre bleu. Now, tradition can be an important asset in a company as old as AMC, a chain that links everyone together, but it can also bind people to doing things wrong. Renault found out that AMC had a horribly...
Shush.
Aw, little birdie.
If you think about it, a bark is like a dog's way of saying Sacre bleu.
Yeah, my little dog was just saying... Sacre bleu, who's out there? Renault found out that AMC had a horribly inefficient supply chain and manufacturing process that wasted lots of money and lots of time. And Business 101 tells us that time is money, baby. The workflows were smoothed out and the old guys running things were retired. And for the time being, Renault would finally bring one of their cars to American shores. It was called the Alliance. This drab sedan was also available as a convertible, and I can assure you, it is the most car-looking car ever built. Okay, guys? I want you guys to close your eyes. Let's do it. Unless you're driving, then keep them open. But let's do a little exercise, a little imagination vacation, okay? Mm-hmm. Imagine a car, all right? Just a basic car, okay? You got it in your head?
I got it, yeah.
Okay, more basic.
Okay.
You visualizing it?
I'm visualizing it.
Okay. I'm seeing like a Mercury Grand Marquis, just like square, and it's tan.
Yeah, that's exactly where you're supposed to be at this point, Joe.
Even more basic than that.
Yeah, more basic.
Yeah, I don't know how it can be more basic. Shorter, I guess?
No, but anyway, that's what the Alliance was. It was just like the most boring car you could possibly imagine.
My initial response when you first said that was, oh, Chrysler LeBaron.
Yeah.
And it looks like a LeBaron.
Yeah, exactly.
Should have gone with my gut.
Okay, so yeah, super basic car, looks a lot like a Chrysler LeBaron. It looks like it might be smaller, and it also looks like it's just kind of like, like someone took a Chrysler LeBaron and was like,
I know what you mean by that.
Despite how boring and basic and the hurtness of it, apparently. It was good enough for Car and Driver because they named the Alliance their car of the year in 1983, which I think, like, I don't want to make any enemies in the automotive press. The Car and Driver Car of the Year doesn't mean anything. It's a fake list. It's like a fake award that they give to people who pay money.
I don't know, man. I think we'll have to look into that. I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
Dude, I got a hunch.
Okay.
Do you know the New York Times bestseller list has nothing to do with sales?
I think we discussed that last week.
Yeah.
All right. Here's an interesting tidbit, boys, about this Renault AMC acquisition. At the time, Renault was owned by the French government, meaning AMC was also owned by the French government. A problem arose when they realized that AMC had a subdivision called AM General, which produced vehicles for the military, like big 6x6 transport trucks. The French government was not allowed to own a defense contractor like AM General, so Renault sold off the AM General assets to General Motors. Included in those assets was the iconic 7-slot Jeep grille design and the Hummer name.
That's what you call a come-up!
In the early 80s, AMC was doing okay, but the winds began to change once again. Their small car sales were flopping hard. If AMC wanted to survive the 80s, they needed something big. And that was a tall order, since Renault themselves weren't doing super hot either. Back in France, it was perceived that AMC's troubles were weighing down Renault, and by extension, the government. And by double extension, the French people, because their taxes were covering Renault's losses.
Dude, AMC's so bad at being a car company, they're going to tank a country.
The options were either sell AMC or do something big. And Renault did something big. They hired one George Bess to run Renault. Bess had a reputation in France for turning things around and making them profitable again. But one key tactic for George's turnaround success was a particularly negative one. Layoffs.
He's like another Renault president, Mr. Carlos Ghosn.
Very, very true, Joe. There's a lot of parallels between Bess and Ghosn. When acting as director of aluminum firm, aluminum firm Pecini Eugene Coleman, Bess ordered the layoff of 30,000 employees.
Oof.
Yeah, you could call George a lot of things, but not inconsistent, because his first directive at Renault was to lay off 21,000 people. George Bess was now responsible for 51,000 people losing their job, and some people might have seen that as an anti-working class move.
I think you could say that out of the side of your mouth if you wanted to.
No,
Nolan, I think you've earned it.
All right. Some people might have seen that as an anti-working class move.
I think it's like okay, that, some people, like you got to, because remember we've been talking about Gary and all these like revolutionary people who are sticking up for the little guy.
Okay.
And so like I think you should really hit that some people, because then we're like, oh, we've been talking about those people.
Some people might have seen that as an anti-working class move. Thank you. Thank you.
No, I feel foreshadowed.
Good.
Within 20 months of Georges taking the reins, Renault was profitable again, and he started investing more money into AMC. Despite the pressure from the French public to let the company go, after all, these workers he laid off were union employees, and yet he wanted to send more money to the U.S.? That's an entirely different country. It was hard for a lot of people to accept, but Georges believed that the key to AMC's success, and by extension Renault's, was making big innovations at Jeep. The SUV craze was on the horizon, and Georges wanted Jeep to lead the way. Georges approved the development of a 4-liter inline-six engine, an engine that would be used in the Jeep Cherokee SUV, and honestly, it's one of the top 10, maybe one of the top 10 engines of all time.
It really
super
is.
Super reliable, gets the job done. You can drive them till 3 gajillion. I mean, there's like million-mile motors out there.
Yeah, my buddy Cody has a his family has a Cherokee with like 350,000 miles on it, and it still runs like a champ.
Yeah,
it's a great engine.
So things were going great for Georges until November 16th, 1987.
On his ride home from Renault headquarters, Georges was probably reading some documents that he didn't have time for at the office, as was his routine. He probably didn't notice the two women pushing a baby stroller down the sidewalk. As his car approached the curb, his daughter waited by the second-story window like she did every night. Georges stepped out of the car as the women approached him. The women said nothing as they fumbled with the blanket in the stroller. It wasn't carrying a baby, but two guns. One of the women opened fire, hitting Georges 4 times before he fell to the sidewalk. After shooting Georges, the assailants dropped their guns and ran to a pair of waiting motorcycles, one of which was driven by Jean-Marc Rouillon. Direct Action had just hit their last and most high-profile target. The four of them went into hiding, as Direct Action claimed responsibility for Georges' death in a letter sent to newspapers 3 months later. They cited Georges' layoffs as a cause for retaliation, as his, quote, imperialist capitalist actions had directly affected workers in France. The four of them, Natalie Ménillon, Joël Aubron, Georges Cipriani, and leader Jean-Marc Rouillon were found shortly after the Direct Action letter was published, hiding out in a farmhouse in Orleans, an hour and a half south of Paris. During their respective trials, all four assassins denied any involvement in the shooting, despite the fact that police found the original letter claiming responsibility when they raided the farmhouse.
Well, do they want to take responsibility for it or not? Because they seem like
I think
they're
like,
proud of it, but they don't want to go to jail kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like you want to be proud of it until you're like
until there's arrested. Consequences.
Yeah, and then you're like, turns out this fucking sucks.
Man, the fame was great, but these prison bars kind of suck.
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Yeah, like last podcast on the left is doing like a really deep, like super multi-part series on the Kennedy assassination. And like apparently right after he did it, or quote unquote did it, Lee Harvey Oswald was just like instant regret. Like, oh man, I didn't really think this through. And I think like that's the case for like a lot of these quote unquote yeah. revolutionaries, which like it's like you're not running for office. You're not like playing by the rules of the system. You're not like really affecting change at all. You're like robbing banks and killing people and like probably like smoking a bunch of cigarettes, drinking wine, and like effing each other. And they're like basically like pulling a Pusha T and like doing like revolutionary cosplay.
That was great. They brought it back full circle.
Thanks, man. So after Georges's death, Renault replaced him with a guy named Raymond Levy, who gave into the pressure and sold off AMC. He was afraid that if AMC went under, it could have meant more layoffs back home at Renault, and he understandably didn't want to risk his life for America's smallest automaker. So in March of 1987, Renault sold the American Motor Corporation to Chrysler for a cool $1.5 billion. And Chrysler soon split the company up into two brands, Jeep and Eagle. And just like that, AMC was no more. That's
the story.
A bop, dude. That is a story.
Yeah. It was amazing just during the research for this how attached I got to AMC. I have like such a new kind of appreciation for the brand. Even though they had a lot of issues, they still made some very interesting cars. And also just the whole, the story with Jean-Marc Rion and Direct Action is just like, so it's bizarre. And
it's crazy. It's bonkers. It's absolute certified begonkers.
Yeah. I don't know. I had a lot of fun researching this one for sure.
Yeah, this was it. I was like confused at first because it was like two different stories going on at once. But it's kind of like AMC was assassinated as well.
Yeah, and you know that. You know, Direct Action, they wanted to get back and get some revenge for the working class. But I think, you know, after the breakup of ANC, who's, you know, I couldn't find any hard numbers on this, but I have to imagine that when AMC was broken up, that a lot of people lost their jobs as well. So really, how much of the working class did these guys actually protect with this action? I don't think it was very many.
As far as like current events goes, like it makes me think like, oh, shit, like Carlos Ghosn very well could be assassinated or like kidnapped and brought back to Japan or some kind of shit like that, because he basically did the same thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he has like, what is it, like ex Green Berets protecting him in Lebanon.
Yeah,
right,
he has
now,
a $13 million bounty on his head too.
Yeah
So I mean, we're the Ghosn story is definitely not over, but I would not be surprised if there's any sort of violence in it, like we saw today in this story.
So yeah, we're not condoning any violence. We're just saying like it's very possible with these trying times.
Who do you think owns like the AMC name?
That's a good question. I don't know. Do you want to buy it?
I think it'd be cool if Donut bought AMC.
That would be so be amazing. Really cool.
There's like a really clean stock Eagle like two blocks away from me, and I always just like slow down to look at it when I drive past it. It's so cool.
That's such a bizarre looking car.
Yeah,
because it's like a wagon, but it's also like a little small, right? Like it's,
yeah,
and it's lifted. The lifted part is the craziest part.
Yeah,
it's all wheel drive. It's crazy. It's so cool.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Nolan, what do we got coming up in next week?
Ooh, I think our next topic is the, we're going to do a big series on a certain motorcycle gang. Should we reveal it now? I think, I mean, there's only one motorcycle gang that we would cover. We're going to be doing a series.
The Biker Boys.
Yeah, the Mayans. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to do a series on the Sons of Anarchy. The Hells Angels. We're doing a series on the Hells Angels. I've already started doing some preliminary research, and we're gonna try to separate fact from fiction and find out what the real story is, because there's such a not iconic but infamous group that there's a lot of
they're incorporated.
Anyway, we're gonna be doing the Hells Angels next week, so stay tuned for that. Should be very interesting.
Also, we have just launched what we're calling Donut Every Day. We have an upload every day of the week. So make sure that you support every Donut Show, or at least check it out and see if you like it. We like all of them. So every Monday, we have Nolan Show Wheelhouse. Every Tuesday, we have Bumper to Bumper with our buddy Jeremiah.
Jeremiah is truly, we had him on the podcast for two episodes. He's truly one of the most interesting people I've ever met.
Right. So. He does everything. He races motorcycles on the weekends, like supercross and motocross.
Yeah, and street bikes. Like actually races them, not just like rides them. Like he goes and races. He's 9.5 feet tall.
He's handsome.
Yeah,
he's got the proportions of Woody from Toy Story.
Yeah, chiseled. So that's Tuesday. Wednesday, another handsome guy, Zach Jobe, is hosting Money Pit. You remember Zach Jobe from High Low? He was my team high teammate. Thursday is my show, Up to Speed. Friday is another show that I host called The D List. It's a list show. It's a different car list show every week. It's super fun. We sort of started it because I'm stuck in my garage and I don't have anything else to do. So we gave me a new show. And then Saturday is another new show called Versus, hosted by our buddy Joey. And then, of course, every Sunday on our Donut podcast channel on YouTube, we have Past Gas with Joe Weber, me, and Nolan. And so that's seven a week. So that's Donut every day. And then I just want to clarify that the podcast, if you're listening to it, yes, it will still come out on Monday everywhere that you get your podcasts.
Let us know on our subreddit if you want to hear about any particular subject on the podcast. We're always looking for new stories to tell.
Yeah, so follow Donut on at Donut Media on all social. Follow James Pumphrey at James Pumphrey as well. Follow Joe at Joe G. Weber. And follow me at Nolan J. Sykes. Be kind.
I love you.
See you next time. Fired up, Joe.
Fired up.
There we go.
Wink, wink. Wink, wink. Fired up.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.